And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, I'm taking the day off, and we're going to be sharing a special edition of Open to Debate. Two conservatives, Jessica Riedel of the Manhattan Institute and Diana Furchtgott-Roth of the Heritage Foundation, will debate the merits of the reconciliation bill, which President Trump called the Big Beautiful Bill Act, passed by Congress earlier this summer. So that's on the way tomorrow. My next guest today is Lawrence Birney. He's a Baltimore-based cultural critic whose recent collection of essays has been getting a lot of good buzz. Birney is the founder of True Laurels, a magazine that covers Baltimore's music and culture scene. He's a former critic for our news partner, the Baltimore Banner, whose work has also appeared in places like New York Magazine, GQ, and Pitchfork. The collection is called No Sense in Wishing, and Lawrence Birney joins me in the studio. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
And congratulations on the collection.
Thank you.
So you talk about this book being an exercise in mining the memory of path-altering episodes. So it's music that has affected you. It's the city of Baltimore, how it's affected you. What were you trying to accomplish with this collection?
I think, you know, I've spent the past decade plus of my writing career just being a critic and being a journalist and being somebody that kind of acts as a tastemaker, I would say, especially for more nationally focused publications. I always took it upon myself to write about not only the things that were happening outside of Baltimore, but I wanted to really shine a light on the things that were happening here and just the whole region from here to D.C., PG County, so on and so forth. But I think when you work in that form of writing, it's a bit shunned to focus on yourself. I think the way you express your personality and your worldview is through the subjects that you engage with. So I think people maybe got tidbits of what kind of person I was, but I never really wrote about my own life. But, you know, I had an agent, my present agent, Will Leturco. He reached out to me during the pandemic 2021. And he asked me, did I have a book in mind? I didn't, but if somebody hits you up and says, do you have a book in mind? you get one in mind. And that's what I did. And, you know, I actually, the first idea I had for the book, I don't want to say too much about it, but it was more focused. It was more in line with what I was already doing as a writer. You know, kind of like dropping myself into a counterculture or a micro scene or something that's really beloved within a small group of people and just kind of like going deep on that particular thing. I had a prominent Baltimore club figure in mind. That I wanted to center a book around, but as I started the process, started researching, started interviewing people, I realized like this is going to take a really long time. And on top of that, I think I wasn't sure if that was the right route to take as far as introducing my voice to the world. So I started thinking about some of the writers that I admire, like Ta-Nehisi Coates or Kiese Layman or Hanif Abdul-Rakib or Tressie McMillan Cottom. A lot of these writers, their first books or first one or two books are essay collections that bring people into the way that they see the world. They might talk about particular topics. They might talk about race, gender, class, art, what have you, but it's still coming from their own perspective, and they use tidbits of their own lives to kind of illustrate the point that they're trying to make. So I figured maybe I should go that route. Maybe I should get people invested into my own story and how I see things.
It's a very personal book.
Yeah,
there's a lot of vulnerability in this book. When you talk about yourself and your kids and your career, but it also talks about the sort of the revelatory moments that you have through the music that you're writing about. I mean, I think it's one of the reasons that makes you a good cultural critic is clearly this is moving you on a personal level. And in a book like this, you're able to express that personal side, whereas you might not do that in New York Magazine or The Banner or something.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it's beautiful because I think, honestly, like when I zoom away up from it, I am talking about myself, but I'm only talking about myself enough to drive the point home of this is how strong of an effect that this cultural product had on me, that it made me rethink things that I was doing in my life, or it triggered a certain memory from childhood. And I think everybody has those experiences with music, film, visual art, what have you. I just think maybe people don't always have people in their lives that they could talk to about it. Luckily for me, I've a lot of people I surround myself with are kind of like into the things I'm into. They might not be writers, but it was a nice exercise. And I thought the way to get people invested in the music or the art that I'm talking about, I had to put myself into it and maybe it become a little more relatable.
Lawrence Burney is my guest. His new collection of essays is called No Sense in Wishing. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. So Lawrence, one of the artists you talk about is Lupe Fiasco, a rap artist who is actually going to be here in Baltimore in the fall, teaching in the first hip-hop program that they've just established at the Peabody Institute, along with our good friend Wendell Patrick, who's been doing it for a long time. So he's a major, major figure in the world of hip-hop. What do you think it is about his music that that gets to you? You talk about encountering him as a teenager and then encountering him later as an adult.
Yeah, I think, the effect that he has on me now is completely different. I mean, I respect Lupe to a high degree. I think he's one of the most brilliant minds that's ever come through the hip-hop culture. But I think when I encountered his music as a teen, it was at a time where I think I was about 16 or 15, something like that. And as a lot of teenagers are around that time, you're searching for self. You're searching for what kind of person do I want to be? Who are my friends? How are all these things going to affect my future? And when I encountered Lupe's music, I actually didn't like it at first because it came through a cousin who I thought was cool, but he was just very different. You know, he was more different than I dared to be at the time. I was more like trying to fit in with the cool crowd and do all the things that I deemed cool, that the majority in my social scene did. And Lupe's music ran counter to that to an extent. His first song was kind of a skateboarding anthem that wasn't really about skateboarding, but if you watch the video, it seems like it's about skateboarding, you know. Mm-hmm. And when I was a teenager at that time, at least in my community, skateboarding wasn't cool. It's like you were actual not cool if you skateboarded. But the more I dug into his music, because when I saw my cousin and his friends rejoicing and rapping his lyrics together, I thought it was a little cheesy, but I was jealous of them because they had a certain type of freedom and how they expressed that masculinity at the time that I didn't have. So when I got to my own little corner, I started digging deep for Lupe's music, and I realized that it was a really beautiful assessment of the Black American condition. Maybe he was specifically talking about his city, which was Chicago, but it applied to what I was seeing in Baltimore City at the time. So I became a super fan. It lasted that way all the way up until my early adulthood.
And it's interesting to hear you write about how you encountered that music 20 years ago, mm-hmm. you know, and then how you're encountering it now as an adult, and that evolution that you make personally, along with the evolution, of course, that all the artists are making. You write about the role of a culture journalist. Is it different than a cultural critic? How do you see your role when you talk about defining the culture, advancing the culture, explaining the culture?
I think over the years I've worn different hats when it comes to being I like to say I'm a documentarian. I mean, maybe that's cheesy, but I do think what I've been attempting to do over the years is to kind of log the things that I see happening creatively in my own community. I mean, obviously, like in the national, international space as well. But I think specifically what I've done or tried to keep in mind as I engage with the scene in the Baltimore DMV area is to, I think critique takes care in honesty. You know, I think sometimes it's looked at as kind of a pest in a way. I think, you know, I've had
yeah,
that.
Artists and critics, you know, tend not to get along. Yeah.
It's a contentious relationship sometimes, but it's also a relationship of respect if people go into it with an open mind. Like, I don't think, I mean, obviously there's been times when I've been kind of heavy handed with criticism, but I would say for the most part, the things that I have the most passion criticizing are things that I actually am a huge fan of. It's just that when I'm encountering it, I might say, well, I think this is done really well. I don't like the way that this person approached their production, or I don't like the themes in these particular songs. I think this person is better than this, and so on and so forth. I think it's a push and pull. It's like you talk about the things that don't work, but you also talk about the things that do work, and you talk about the things that you believe based on your experience encountering this work and other work within this orbit, what you think its potential is. And I think that's healthy criticism.
And you write about how some of these artists, you know, are very, very impactful to lots of folks, not just you. When it comes to Mike, for example, you write about the kids who sit on buses for hours by themselves just to catch a show that means something to them. People have to be reminded of the investment that goes into the investment of time, the investment of money for the tickets, the whole thing. You know, I mean, this is a very, very consequential experience for people in the hip hop community.
Yeah, for sure. And I think to me, Mike is exciting because I think when I listen to him and I go to his shows and I get an opportunity to observe his fan base, there is a level of nostalgia there for me. It reminds me of, and he's not like that much younger than me, but I think I'm probably 8 years older than Mike. I mean, he would argue probably that's a lot older. But I think when I see Mike in action and his creative peers and just the world building that he's doing, he has his own label. They put out their own merchandise. They throw an annual festival. When he goes on tour, he brings as many of his peers as he can. Sometimes it's 10 people, 10 supporting acts on the bill. And I think I relate to that that attempt at world building, especially when you feel like nothing else that you observe in the hip hop space is exactly what you want it to be. So you create that thing. And when you create it, you realize that this is something that a lot of people actually wanted, because they show up and they invest time into your art and they get emotional when you perform songs and stuff like that. So I always always make sure that I engage with youth culture, no matter how much older I get, because there's a collective energy and optimism behind what they have going on. And Mike is probably the best example I've seen of he's underground. I don't know how much counterculture you would say, but he's for sure like an underground, homegrown artist. Like, you're not hearing him on the radio. And that quote that you mentioned, the kid I was talking about that got on the bus for hours is a young guy from here. His name is Joshua Slow, young artist, young brilliant artist. I was convening with some friends outside of a Mike concert in New York City last summer, and Josh just popped up out of nowhere, and I was like, what are you doing here? And he said, I caught the bus from home just to see the show, and he was going back that same night. And I remember doing stuff like that. I remember catching the boat bus up to New York just to catch a performance and come right back. You know, when you're young and you don't have as many responsibilities, that's the best time to take advantage of your passion for certain artists.
Lawrence Birney, the new collection of essays is called No Sense in Wishing. Where's that title come from?
So the title comes from, it actually comes from a documentary titled Girlhood. And it came out in 2003, I believe, but it was filmed in 1999. It was by a director named Liz Garbus, and she focused on two teenage girls who were from here, from Baltimore City, and they were in a juvenile detention center, I believe, out in Jessup. And the film follows these young girls while they're incarcerated, and they're both fighting their way to get out. So it kind of tracks how they got there, their journey to getting out, and then they actually get out. And at the end, the filmmaker was asking one of the main characters, a girl named Megan, she asked her if she had three wishes, what would they be? And Megan took a little while, she paused, and she said she wouldn't. You know, she wouldn't take the three wishes. She says, no, it ain't no sense in wishing, because everything is here, everything is around me. Anything that I need to propel myself to where I want to be, I can utilize those things. And I kind of interpreted that as something I feel like that I've been doing in my journalistic and writer career since I started, is just looking around me and looking in my own community, in my own city, in my own region, and engaging with that. And those, and that approach got me to where I am. Maybe I'm not that far, depending on who asks, but I think it's a good message. I think it's also something I really urge any young writer, especially in the music and creative fields, that ask me, like, how do I make a name for myself, or how do I get out there? And I always suggest that you should cover your own immediate surroundings, because if you write about the nationally or internationally popular stuff, you have a lot of competition there. But if you focus on what is going on in your own community, and you try to act as a loudspeaker to people outside of that community, that will distinguish you from everybody else, because everybody else can't say what's happening in Baltimore. Everybody can't say what's happening in Seattle or Mobile, Alabama. It takes a person that's there to do that.
Well, I think listeners can get a real sense of how you can contextualize, and really elucidate what's going on in the music scene in all of these essays that you write about so much music and your life here in Baltimore. It's called No Sense in Wishing. Lawrence Birney is my guest and the author of this collection. He'll be talking about the book tonight at the Ivy Bookshop in conversation with Dee Watkins, another great writer from here in Baltimore, and that event begins at 7 o'clock. Thanks, Lawrence. Really appreciate it, and congratulations on the book.
Thank you so much.
And up next, Midday Theater critic J. Wynn Russick will join me with a review of Peter and the Starcatcher at Cockpit in Court. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.